Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
JJ, this is a bucket list moment for the channel, but we'll exchange hugs and kisses later, I promise. Let's get right into a trade. So it's a 12-team Superflex PPR 1.75 tight end premium start 10. The 107 and Drake London, or CeeDee Lamb and the 205. Go ahead, JJ.
I think this is fairly tough. I'm a pretty big Drake London guy. Been buying him for the last year. Looked like an idiot last year, but very pumped about Kirk Cousins being there. I think that he's like a I haven't done my dynasty rankings update totally. I'm just waiting for free agency to kind of settle a little bit. I think he's kind of, even with rookies involved, probably fringe top 10 at this point at wide receiver, at least, around that point. So I do think this is close. I'm probably still leaning Lamb just because I think he's the best player in the deal and leaning that side. I also think that there's at least a chance that we see that 107. I know that's a point in the draft where you're still getting a pretty solid elite player in this class, but
right.
We always think of things a little bit cleaner than they actually end up, post-draft. So I'm probably just going to go with the Lamb side. I think it's just a safer bet, but I could make the argument, especially with 1.75 tight end premium and Brock Bowers potentially being around there, and you might being able to see if he falls, if quarterbacks fall in the right spot and stuff.
But I'm probably going to if it's an active league and you can see yourself being able to make some moves, right?
Right, right. But I'm probably going to play it safe and go with Lamb here.
Scott, where's your head at, man?
Yeah, I mean, you immediately go start 10, best player in the deal. But got a lot of steam on London. If I can bank that 107, kind of know what that 107 could be. There's going to be options there. Quarterback, maybe tight end. There's going to be a receiver. Like two of those three are going to be there. So I think it comes down to what can I do in my league. There are some leagues where if you have Drake London right now, you can add something to Drake London to get up to somebody like CeeDee Lamb, and it may not have to be the 107. Now, the only downside is if you make this trade, your league sees this trade. The market's kind of been set, and now it's hard to trade Drake London again unless you're kind of following the same price that was just set. I'm knowing how I play, you know what? I'm actually kind of leaning going on the 107 in London side. The 205 is a kicker pick that you have to give that I can see where that's enough for the person getting CeeDee Lamb to go, hey, I get a pick to play with. So I think it's very close. But just for some fun, I think I'll go with the London and the 107 side. Ray and I talked about it last night. If there's a guy that can break into the Chase Jefferson Lamb tier, it's Drake London with his current situation. Is he going to get there? It's probably not a great bet. But if there's a guy that can come from outside the top 10 to inside the top 5, it's probably him.
Yep, for sure. Shane, where are you at on this one? Did you chime in already, sir?
No.
You like a lot of context? Pieces here. You like a lot of pieces.
Can I get any context to this? How's my team looking?
Well, ask me some questions.
I mean, who am I starting at wide receiver? I'm starting CeeDee Lamb. Okay, I'm starting CeeDee Lamb. Who's my wide receiver two?
Let's see, your wide receiver two is Puka. You got a good one.
Oh, Jesus. I'm already smashing. Oh, man. I don't know if that makes me more likely or less likely to trade for London now. Now that I'm thinking about that, I'm not moving. I'm not breaking up that wide receiver duo. I do like the 107. Obviously, you can do so much with that. It's fungible, as I've heard other podcasts saying lately. Stop it. My word. It's a fungible asset. I can attach that to a lot of different things. I could attach it to my other first and see what wide receiver I could get with that. If I want to get really, really, adventurous, I could throw the 107, maybe like the 108 and a 25 first at someone and say, tell me no for ARSB. Go ahead, do it.
Three firsts for Amon-Ra St. Brown is what you just said there.
I have Puka and CD, right?
I
traded one of them. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get the idea though. JJ, so yeah, obviously Drake London's big talk. Kyle Pitts, we just did a Dynasty Trades in 5 minute trade show on him the other day. With Kirk Cousins, go in there. Just talk about the offense, man. Talk about the profiles. Congrats on the prospect guide launch, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Yeah, Drake London was someone who, after that class's rookie season, you know, I have this year two model, which just looks at players' prospect score and then layers on top some rookie season numbers, predictive numbers, and then spits out this year two score. And Drake London was in the same exact tier as Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. I mean, he looked no different than those guys. It's not considering landing spot and where they're playing and situation. But I mean, he was a beast his rookie season. I mean, he had unbelievable yards per route run numbers. Really, his per route numbers across the board were incredible. Incredible target share. He's a legit player, and he was a legit prospect entering the league. And then obviously last year happens, and even when you give last year a lot of context of the quarterback, etc., he still outperformed expectation, I think, on like a peripheral standpoint. His target share dipped a little bit, but it was still strong enough. So I think Drake London is an elite player, elite talent. And now you get Kirk Cousins, you're going to see that offense probably throw the ball 150 more times than they did last year. With this, and not only that, but you get a McVay tree offensive coordinator, which obviously we saw worked with Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. It's all coming together to be a very, very good situation. I don't like buying into hype so much when it's so obvious like this, Like I want to be a little contrarian and I want to go against the grain a bit because everyone's hyping up this offense right now, but it's kind of hard not to, right? Like this is
it's hard not to. Kirk Cousins, he's like the best quarterback ever for his, you know, targets or whatever, but go ahead.
Right. It's a perfect situation. You got like, hold up, like Bijan Robinson, all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but I mean, like you can feel great about Bijan now. Kyle Pitts could see a resurgence and obviously he's still super young. So yeah, I mean, like I think it's a brilliant, brilliant spot for fantasy goodness to really come out. And I'm at the point too with London in particular, where I know obviously his price is going to rise, but I think he's still going to be a buy after that ends up settling.
Scott, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I'll just add on this. I mean, you're probably playing Dynasty wrong if you're waiting until these outcomes happen and then you're going, oh, I need to go buy Drake London. Now, acknowledge what JJ just said. You still can be a buyer on the way up. A lot of the richest people in the world have bought stuff after it goes up, but it's going to go up even more. And they're like, man, I didn't get it 2 weeks ago when it was half the price, but I also know it's going to go up in price or it's going to go up in value. So I'm still going to buy on the way up. But just acknowledge you're buying something. I'm not saying Drake London is 80% of the way to the ceiling. We already said he could get into the top five potentially. But the person that has him, he's not quite Amon-Ra St. Brown or AJ Brown or Puka Nacua, but he's right there. The person that has had him has been waiting for this. And the person that has had him has been kind of forecasting this. And if you were just sitting out there going, well, maybe they'll get Kirk Cousins. But then you didn't buy till they actually signed Kirk Cousins. I mean, the writing's been on the wall that they're after Cousins for a while. You know what I mean? It's not like this came out of nowhere and it shocked everybody to where we make this big adjustment. So his value's kind of been hanging in that wide receiver 10 to 15 range. But some of the other guys in there, Ayuk, Pittman, DJ Moore, like he's blowing past those guys. As soon as anything positive happens, they are who they are. So if now you're going, oh, what should I pay for Drake London? Is this enough? Is that enough? I'm kind of tempted to go back to my Drake London shares and go, can I go downward? Because here's the thing. If I can get Brandon Ayuk in a 26 first for Drake London, there's a chance I have just as good of a receiver. But there's not the shine on some of the guys I could pivot off of. So now my question to Shane is, Shane, can you pivot the other way and sell Drake London for that type of deal? Or are dynasty managers too smart? Can I get a DJM or a Brandon Ayuk and a 26 first for Drake London?
Right.
Can you keep, smart enough? What do you think?
No. Keep naming dudes like that, though. DJ Moore, Brandon Ayuk, people that they just
Michael
don't
Pittman,
like.
Michael Pittman, DK Metcalf.
I don't know about DK, but yeah, no, yeah, I get the point though.
Waddle.
Yeah, it's players like that. Waddle. It's players like that that you can move for and get that first at it. Yeah, definitely. I think you can make that move easy because we are overreactionary, right? And it's like you said, now everyone's right. going to go, shit, I don't have any London. I want some London now that he's with Kirk Cousins. When literally, like you said, all they had to do is watch the Falcons last year and go, oh, they're getting a new quarterback and probably
coach next year.
Like, I don't care who the quarterback was. I could have went out there and I would have done better than Ritter. Less interceptions, I guarantee it.
JJ, so I kind of want to parlay this into your prospect guide that you just launched. So Drake London is kind of an example. The way we like to play, and ideally, hopefully everybody plays this way, but is drafting and owning and trading for insulated receivers, insulated dynasty assets. You go off of a prospect like Drake London. He looks good the first year. The peripherals look good. Is this why we should be really focusing on them as a prospect so that we're giving them, I don't know, their due value insulation, if that makes sense? How should we be looking at these guys?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I mentioned earlier, I have the year two model, and that model looks at prospect score and then layers on top the year one peripherals, rookie season peripherals and such. And I do think that we're still in a dynasty world where people latch on to the prospect score stuff or how they viewed prospects at times a little bit too heavily, right? So I think, the guy that we talked about very briefly before we hopped on was JSN. It's a perfect example where, like my model, the stuff that I look at, like JSN last year, there were people who liked him a lot more than I did because there were some crazies out there with JSN. but at the same time, you look at what he did year one, you can make as many excuses as you want about why he performed the way that he did. 17% target share, low A dot, one of the worst screen rates in football, or low or highest screen rates in football, passes behind the line of scrimmage consistently. You can make all these excuses, but number one, situation hasn't changed, right? They kept Tyler Lockett. They still have the same quarterback situation. Noah Fant's even still there. Obviously coaching staff change and that could affect things in some way. But there's people that are still latched onto. I mean, the fact that his price didn't budge nearly as much as it should have year over year, given the performance. If that performance happened to almost anyone else, we probably would have seen a much bigger dip. And so basically what I'm getting at is that prospect score still matters. The reason why I like looking at these models and why I think they're beneficial is because when you're looking at this stuff inherently within your own mind, it's very easy to overstate or understate individual metrics. I say this all the time too, when you're prospecting, like people a few years ago when Chris Olave, Drake London and Garrett Wilson class came out, people were just straight up fading Chris Olave because of his early declare status, right? It was just like, oh, we're not drafting Chris Olave because he didn't go to school because he went to school for 4 years, which there is signal to early declare status, right? It's just a matter of how much weight you're giving that one individual metric. And the dynasty community largely gave it a little bit too much weight. And, obviously it sounds like I'm just saying that in hindsight, but I got receipts on my podcast and stuff. I think, to your question, I know that I'm just kind of going a roundabout way of it, but like the prospect scores matter, but we're finally seeing these guys perform in the NFL. And it's important to make sure that that's consistent and that growth is still there. Right. Even if they maintain, it's important to at least see that when you have an NFL sample. So hopefully that answers what you're trying to get at. And a guy like Drake London after year one, situationally wasn't really there for him. Peripheral wise, unreal, right? And his prospect score, unreal. Everything was great for London, where that where he was being ranked and where people were what people were paying for him was essentially closer to a 25th, 20th percentile outcome, versus if anything changed offensively, like we're seeing now. Now you're going to get into that 80th, 90th percentile outcome.
Love it. Yeah. So we have the privilege of being able to see the prospect guide ourselves and know who you like best, but clean this up or do it for us in terms of how you would rank the top three or top four wide receivers. So you've got Marv, you've got Neighbors, you've got Adunze. Who do you like? And then we'll go to the more niche ones. Everybody knows the good ones, right?
Yeah. So, right now the model technically likes Neighbors more than Harrison. It's like a 99.5 score to a 99.3 score. I played it a little safer and just ranked Harrison ahead of Neighbors in my pre-draft stuff, mostly because I do think that there's more subjective things that aren't in the model that I shouldn't say worry me. I mean, I think both of them are like cornerstone pieces, but Neighbors Played a lot more in the slot and got a lot of production out of the slot, which is a little bit scary. And then, you know, with Harrison, he did it multiple seasons, right? Like we saw him like environment change, quarterback change, all that stuff. And yeah. he still balled out. Right. So we at least have that, with Harrison to feel a little bit more comfort. So I have Harrison as wide receiver one, Neighbors is two. And then I have, to me, there's a tier break to Rome Odunze. I know that some film watchers and some might have Odunze in that tier. I just don't think that he's necessarily, as elite, at least analytically. Sure. You know, you can, my model does have a teammate score. So he gets bumped up a little bit with Jalen Polk and Jalen McMillan having played at Washington with him. But there are some reddish flags where, yeah, he's not an early declare. That's not that big of a deal. His score would have only gone up by like 0.5 points if he were an early declare. But you know, yards per team pass attempt is a metric that gets weight in the model via this proxy of breakout score. Breakout score is a number from 0 to 100. This is a new metric that I created this offseason, where I'm not a big breakout age fan, only because it's very, very binary in the way that it's calculated. You know, it's like either a guy broke out or he didn't break out. So breakout score is sort of, there's a ton of different thresholds that these guys can hit in yards per team pass attempt to create a breakout score of 0 to 100. And Rome Odunze, his breakout score is 86. The other guys were at like 97, 98, the other two guys. Yeah. So his breakout score is a little bit lower, you know, which makes sense because he didn't really have that monster of a season until that final year. The other thing too, that I feel like has been a little bit, I mean, we can talk him as a sleeper too.
Yeah.
But Jalen McMillan, man, 2 years ago, like last year banged up and you had Jalen Polk, kind of ball out and obviously Rome Odunze ball out, but McMillan was banged up and he was playing that slot role 2 years ago. He outperformed, or he at least, I shouldn't say outperformed. He got close performance wise and production wise to Rome Odunze in 2022. And I feel like people are kind of just brushing that over because of what happened last year. But yeah, I mean, like Odunze's numbers weren't nearly as good, leading up. I mean, he progressed and got better and better, but you know, things weren't as good until his senior season. Those are the top three. And then I think after the top three, like after Odunze, you get another tier break and you can make arguments for a few guys. I think, I mean, you can make an argument for Brian Thomas and his raw skill set. Problem with Thomas that I have is that, dude, it's so hard to find comps for him. Like I have a system of finding comps within the model, and his closest comp was not really that close, but it was Quentin Johnston. And you know,
he's high as hell in your model, right? Isn't he 99 point something too? It looked like he had a really high score.
Who's
in your prospect guide, BTJ?
He's at like 94 something, yeah, or like 95. Oh, okay. Like he's not far off from Rome Odunze. So like
you got it.
Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers model wise at like the 99 range, and then Odunze's in like the 95, and Brian Thomas is right there. Xavier Worthy's right there too. But like I think if you dig into each of these guys after Odunze, you can find warts to their profiles. Like Brian Thomas, you know, they're obviously only 1 year of like supremely good production, and the other years were pretty shaky. Xavier Worthy, you have to question if this is like, I know that Rondell Moore was injured throughout college, but is it that arc where like peaked as a freshman, really didn't see much more out of him, and then you see what he's done in the NFL, which is not much. That scares you a little bit. You know, I'm not one who thinks that Worthy is like a John Ross type though, because there's a lot more substance to his profile than what we saw from John Ross. And then like Troy Franklin is falling for me a little bit. I mean, I just didn't like what I saw from him at the combine and such. I could go down the list and just find warts for a lot of these guys. So I think, you know, right now I have Brian Thomas at wide receiver 4. But you know, I think I'm at least open-minded to how things can shift post-draft.
Yeah. Yeah. Landing spot. Scott, Shane, chime in. What are your thoughts on all this?
I mean, I mostly read over the models and how he got to them. I mean, that was kind of more interesting to me than the specific players, because kind of the players kind of match. I won't give it away. I won't give away the ending. They're kind of where I thought they were going to be. But I was more interested in the models because I'm always interested in how people get to what they get to. I did have one question, though, and I don't ask questions usually. It's not my gig. When do you ignore the model? Do you ever ignore the model for a player?
Yeah, all the time. I always tell people that and I even wrote about this a little bit in the guide that it's a guide more than anything else. I mean, this is something that I use to make sure that I'm not doing anything stupid. And this is the thing that, you know, made sure that I was not too low on Chris Olave when, you know, he came out and was not an early declare, right? Just stuff like that. Like where if the model's saying something, and you know, the let me take a step back. At the end of the day, all we're trying to do, all four of us, we're just trying to beat the market, right? We know that we're all going to agree largely on Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, even Rome Odunze. Like, I'm sure Odunze is going to be a pretty consensus wide receiver three among dynasty players, right? And so what the model really helps me with is spotting guys that people would just not necessarily be on, largely because I'm looking at them in the first place, but then I'm also profiling them and sort of going through their journey and writing that up and sort of like looking at their statistical profiles in a different way. And so when I get like lower in the model, especially, right, like when I'm talking like a score of like 65, 55, I don't really care that much anymore about like where he ranks versus the guy who ranks, who's, you know, has a score 45 out of 100, right? So there's a lot of that going on where I'm most definitely pretty subjective with stuff that low, because, you know, at times too, like I'm going to look for a profile or see a profile. Like there's a couple guys in this class this year, like Isaiah Williams or Luke McCaffrey, guys who played quarterback and converted, where objectively the model's going to say this guy wasn't that great of a wide receiver because he only played 2 years a wide receiver and he really didn't put up, like, his numbers weren't that strong. But then I can say, oh, this guy showed out because he's an athlete. He converted from quarterback to wide receiver and he still did this. And then I can just bump them up a little bit more subjectively. So there's definitely stuff like that, that I, you know, we'll shift and move. And I, you know, like one example too, is that wide receiver weight is not, and size is not part, is not an input in the model.
Not at all.
Yeah. Running back weight is an input in the model, but wide receiver size is not. And so, but I do think that a little subjectively, like Xavier Worthy is going to look pretty good in the model, but I'll probably not be quite as high as what, because, you know, his realistic outcome to be a truly elite asset, which is what I'm going to be looking for, right, is like Tyreek Hill, right? Like he needs to kind of be in, like, if he's Marquise Brown, if he's you know, like that's his top comp from the model. If he's Marquise Brown, that's not a win. You know, you don't want to spend a first, you know, to get a Marquise Brown. I know that he had decent enough production early on, but you're shooting for more upside, right? So I'll bump those kinds of guys down slightly in rankings, even if the model likes, and like the model liked Tutu Atwell more than it should have, you know, part of that was Rams spent stupid capital on him and they shouldn't have, but yeah, just stuff like that. I'll definitely be a little bit more subjective with it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Scott, any thoughts?
Yeah, one thing I'm curious on is, you know, we're huge, at least I am huge, and we tend to do this a lot on the show, is really trying to decipher where kind of these thresholds and pockets of what matters and what doesn't matter in your league format, depending on how shallow it is, how deep it is, the scoring, how many roster spots, all of those kind of things. And we get a lot of questions that are super shallow leagues or super deep leagues and everything in between. So you're constantly trying to walk this line between, okay, first thing is I have to figure out, do these players matter in the format that somebody is asking? A 10-team start nine league, the reality is there's only probably about 24 receivers that even matter. Everybody below it, whether you think this player is better than that player, they're below the range where you'd ideally want to be probably starting them. And then so that at that point, you have to kind of reconcile, okay, their value on the market versus how can it actually help my starting lineup? Then we get into deeper leagues where it's like what people typically will analyze goes well beyond, or the league format goes well beyond where people are really drilling down into some of these details. a 14 team start 13 league. Like, anybody that's breathing matters. Yet as soon as you get down to a certain range, people on this show and the audience, they'll just go, that guy's a can. He doesn't matter. But like in that format, Jameson Williams is a valuable asset. Now, I may not prefer him over somebody cheaper, but he's a locked in starter. Like, Gabe Davis is somebody you have to actually analyze and have a take on versus, ah, he's not any good. That's because the mainstream people are probably saying, well, yeah, he's not really relevant in your typical redraft league or, you know, your start eight best ball league. So I wanted to kind of ask you a question about a specific player that I have thought about a lot. And it's somebody that scores very high in your year two model. And if you removed the name, if you removed what you know about his situation, if you removed some of the maybe bias that goes into what he is now versus what he was as a prospect, and then I gave you all the information that you have in your guide and his year one numbers, people would go, hell yeah, that's good. That's great. That's a really good player. Then I tell you the name and not one person since I've brought his name up has been excited to have him in your typical like 12 team start 10 league. Any idea? You guys, Shane and Clay may know who I'm talking about. But it's a player that if you look at his prospect model, you go, you know what? That he fit all the criteria.
Can I get a position probably, at least?
It's a wide receiver. And everyone on here in this stream would probably say, yeah, this guy's a can. I don't really care about him.
Michael Wilson?
He's not a fit. Pickens. A little better a great prospect. Better prospect than probably Xavier Worthy level prospect. Produced at an early age, produced all 3 years, didn't test amazingly, but was very good. Didn't get great draft capital, but good enough. But if you just took the prospect profile, you'd be like, that guy could have been
what we Amon think. Ra?
No.
No, it's last year's
wide second
receiver.
Year model.
Oh. All right. Help us out here, Scott.
In JJ's second year model, he has this guy up there with all the receivers we would consider to be good. Nobody likes him. Josh Downs.
I was actually going to mention Downs, yeah.
And here's the thing. What is Josh Downs worth? 12 teams start 10. What's he worth? I guarantee you people would draft 15 receivers in this class before they take him because he's not fun. Yeah. They don't really like him. He's too small. He's a slot receiver, but blah, 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 blah. But how do you reconcile a guy like that where your model, you put this out to your subscribers, they may look at Josh Downs and they go, man, JJ really doesn't think like Josh Downs and JSN are that different.
Yeah.
And it's not crazy to squint and go, man, both of them could have 80 for 900 and they're not that different yet. They are at least a first round pick away in value in terms of how somebody sees them. How do you reconcile that? Like, is that one where you'll just go hedge and be higher on Josh Downs and sell your JSNs? Like, how do you play that when you have players that close, but the market is so far apart?
Yeah. I mean, like going back to the question before, like this is a really good way, in my opinion, to find arbitrage via the models, right? Like realistically, take a step back. Like the JSN versus Josh Downs thing is so interesting to me because both guys play incredibly similar roles in their offense. Both slot guys, both had pretty similar peripherals last. Josh Downs' peripherals were better last year than JSN's peripherals were. Again, this is measuring year two and year three output, right? So I'm looking only in the next two-year window for the year two model. The prospect model is the first 3 years of their career. And then you just line it up and you're like, man, objectively, if you were to remove the names and do a blind resume, Josh Downs looks better than JSN, like right now today, based on what they did year one and even where they're at year two. You know, the year two model prefers JSN slightly more, but it's by like 0.1, I think, at this point. It's like 92.1 versus 92. But then in my write-up for Josh Downs, everything you just said, Scott, the very end is like me basically saying buy Josh Downs. Like, I think Josh Downs is a really interesting buy candidate right now because people do not care about Downs. And I can understand it. You know, this is, going back to you talking about league size and stuff, slot guys are generally going to be probably lower ceiling, unless you get like an Amon-Ra hit or something like that. But, you know, I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think he's very, very good, but we also would probably agree that like situation's still helping him to some degree, right? Like they haven't really gotten that true alpha beside him to be able to take those looks away. And so, you know, nothing against him. I still think he's a great asset, but like, let's just be realistic. And so, these slot guys, yeah. I mean, like the one of the comps that I had for Downs coming out last year was Tyler Lockett. And then I have these journey comparables, which is also really fun to look at where, in the year two model, I look at prospect score. And then I look at year two score and I just combine those two and say, which players in history have a similar prospect score and a similar year two score? And Tyler Lockett popped up again for Josh Downs. And nice. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is the trajectory that Josh Downs is going. Now, the main difference, and they had really, really similar numbers year one, but the main difference is that everyone thinks that Tyler Lockett's a slot-only guy, but he's not. You know, year one, he was even playing the perimeter more than he played the slot. As a rookie, he had a 33% slot rate. Josh Downs was at 81%. And then you layer on top, you know, Anthony Richardson didn't play last year. Probably going to be a little bit more run-heavy of an offense. You know, is it going to be there for Josh Downs from a volume perspective? But all of those situational factors I'm willing to eat, especially, you know, going back to what you were talking about, Scott, if you're in a deeper league, I'm more okay with going after and having these decent depth players that maybe not, you know, Josh Downs likely doesn't have a wide receiver one ceiling, right? Will he have a wide receiver two season, everyone? Potentially. I think it's in his range of outcomes. It's not much different. It's like a, you know, if you want to play arbitrage even more and go even further down, it'd be like DeMario Douglas, right? Where like he had a really underrated rookie season, looked pretty decent in the year two model. I think that Downs is a better player. I would rather invest in Downs and have Downs on my roster than DeMario Douglas. But, you know, we're talking about players who, if you're in a league where you're starting four or five, six wide receivers or more,
they're relevant.
Yeah, they're relevant. They're very,
very much so. Like, yeah, that's why we like playing in the deep leagues, man.
It's fine to get 12, 13 points and go on with your life from those guys, right? And if people are going to not buy into them because of some perception that they have, then I would lean into it and buy into it. But yeah, I mean, I do think at the end of the day, you know, I'm higher on Josh Downs in the market and I'm lower on JSN than the market. And I think the year two model just kind of helps bring that picture and paint that picture for everyone.
Ray G is ready backstage. As I said on Twitter or the X machine, whatever you want to call it, it'd be a disservice to not have Ray G on with you guys talking prospects. I am a waste of oxygen and space on StreamYard right now. So I am going to bail and you guys are going to have an awesome conversation that I will make into a video after the fact. So Ray, let's get you up here. Do we need to remove myself?
What's going on, y'all?
There he is.
What's up?
Good stuff. Well, we're going to actually transition in. Welcome, Ray, to the show. This is not Destination Chill. This is Dynasty Trades in 5. Ray is on with JJ Zacharyson. We're going to go for a half hour without Clay, and we're going to talk running backs. So we're ready to talk running backs and the impact of the running back free agency signings. So I want to start with Ray, since you just got here. Ray, we already talked receivers, prospect models, Drake London, did a trade, kind of talk through some of that. So we're shifting to running backs for the next 30 minutes. Just talk about this class, because I know you've talked about it quite a bit. You and I have done countless hours of content talking about running backs, how we approach them. Gosh knows everybody watches Trades in 5, and they know how we already value running backs generally. Shane and I are very famous for just sell, sell, sell. If they ever have any value, sell. But I think it's an interesting spot because we have I don't want to say a bad class, but what people would probably classify as a non-impactful class. But I want to talk to you, Ray, just asking about, okay, non-impactful, no elite running backs in this class. None are probably going to go in the top 50 picks. I would make a very strong bet that that's not going to happen. But how much to talk about this class and how much of that is the class or how much of it is just the way running backs are deployed today? The way the landscape is today, because I don't think it's just, man, this class is all bums.
Right,
it's
right.
All backups. There's some circumstance that goes into this, which leads into why we value them how we do. So fire away.
Yeah, appreciate y'all having me on. And you're crazy if you think I'm about to answer that question without saying what's up to the real GOAT first. JJ, my man, hey, appreciate everything you do, big dog. You are... Hats off to you, my friend. So I just wanted to start by saying that and acknowledging JJ. What's up, Shane? What up, Scott? 2024 running back class. Here's the thing, and this it's one of the things that I hope I brought to the fantasy game, or at least what I continue to bring to the fantasy game, and that's pairing how the actual NFL sort of has this impact on fantasy football. But yet when the things are happening in the league, it feels like it takes fantasy football gamers a little while to catch up to what's going on. So first things first, is it a great running back class? I'd say the answer to that question is no. Why? Because you don't have guys that profile like true elite three down type running backs in the NFL. I'm not talking about bell cow. I'm talking about a running back archetype that can handle 20 plus attempts and stay on the field to catch the ball. You don't have those guys in this class. Okay. You can squint and try to create one, but like real football, like no, there's no Breece Hall. There's no Bijan Robinson. There's no Jahmyr Gibbs. But here's why I don't think it's a bad class. Is because there are plenty of options that NFL teams can deploy in specific roles that aren't going to cost them anything. They're not going to cost them. And yes, the NFL probably views Joe Mixon a hell of a lot differently than they do a Marshawn Lloyd, but it's running back and it's the NFL. It's the most easily translatable position. They get guys off the couch to come in and tote the rock. There will be plenty of landing spots and plenty of running backs that yield some level of opportunity for fantasy football gamers. Now, does that level equate to a certain startup price versus an auction dollar? I'm not going to get into all of that, but you're talking about somebody that you can deploy to score you some points. Roster construct to get the elite guys, but there will be plenty of running backs out of this 24 class that will land in spots where opportunity will present itself. They're usable bodies in fantasy. So I don't think it's, you just don't have the elite guys, and that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've seen in free agency. We've seen all the guys that have done it before really kind of landed on their feet, right? Joe Mixon and Aaron Jones get cut, and within 24 hours, they're in another situation, and you're like, yeah, that team probably could have just gone with a rookie, but they go, nah, we got to trade for Joe Mixon. We got to get Aaron Jones. We can't go into it going, we need to draft a running back from this class to fill that gap. JJ, you and I had a great conversation on your show. Late round perspectives where we talked running backs, we talked Kyren Williams, we kind of talked about like the new age running back and what it looks like. But I was going through your guide and you know what Ray just said, it's not a bad running back class. I agree, but there's also selective flavors in this class. And looking through your grades from this year compared to last year, I mean, for instance, like Zach Charbonnet would have been your RB1 or close to it in this class, yet last year. And we're probably biased because he was just kind of a guy last year, but people kind of view him as like, okay, there's no way I would take him over the RB1 or RB2 in this class. But we also know running backs are a lot about opportunity. So why can't Zach Charbonnet be as good as any running back in this class? It's possible that that still happens if the opportunity follows. So talk about, you know, kind of your running back model, how it's evolved, and just your overall thoughts on the class.
Yeah, I feel like I could go for like 45 minutes on this topic right now. So I think number one, I still think Sharps probably would be my RB1 in this class. We just unfortunately saw him go to a team with had Kenneth Walker and everything got screwed up, right? Like he showed out. He actually was pretty decent in his limited action in 2023. I do want to say about this class in general is with my model scores and stuff, like no one in my model right now has a score above 90, which has happened we've had a 90 score every single year since 2011. That includes the 2014 class with Bishop Sankey. I think Sankey barely got there, but Jeremy Hill was the true RB1 in that class. Like Jeremy Hill was the dude who had like a score of 94 or something. So no one's there, but keep this in mind too. Two things. Number one, projected draft capital is part of the score right now, right? That's off of NFL mock draft database. You know, we're all saying, yeah, there's probably not going to be even like maybe not even a round two back in this class. And that's fine. But that at the same time, I think that we all have to take a step back and realize that we're wrong all the damn time with our evaluation, right? There are going to be running backs that end up working out, playing well, and being fantasy assets that we didn't see coming. So let's not be super, super arrogant with our evaluation and thinking that we're going to be right. Right. Because we're not going to be right. There's going to be people that we get wrong. The other thing is to Ray's point. I think there's a lot of guys in the class who can play a pretty specific role and still be fantasy relevant. And this takes me to sort of the discussion we've had, Scott, where today's landscape in the NFL, you have these elite guys. You have what, like 7 legitimate RB1s in Dynasty right now? Like you just like those are the guys that sure you would want on your roster. Even might not even be 7 at this point.
Nah,
those are the guys 4. That you want on your you want on your roster, and you know they're good to go. You know they're elite. You know that no matter the circumstance, they're going to get a bell cow workload. And then you can just get into a bunch of dudes. You get into like the Rashad Whites of the world, which like sure, like you know you can like Rashad White for what he might do in 2024. But we have no idea what the hell is going to happen in that situation. This year moving forward, right? And he's not a special enough talent
to warrant that right. huge workload. And what we're seeing across the league is not just these split backfields, but when you get these split backfields, these RB2s in fantasy are all of a sudden they're not seeing the same workload that RB2s historically have seen, right? If you compare RB2s right now in fantasy to RB2s 5-6 years ago, it's totally different. And what that does is it allows the uber efficient running backs to actually step in and have efficiency matter a little bit more than it had historically. What I mean by that is smaller guys, like guys who we historically kind of brushed off because the size wasn't there. And look, size matters in a lot of ways, but from a running back standpoint, size is absolutely an input and a thing that matters in my prospect model. So I don't want to say that that's not a thing, but when you look at someone like a Keaton Mitchell and what he did last year, right? Let's just assume that Keaton Mitchell didn't tear up his knee. Keaton Mitchell hypothetically could have walked into the next season and been a low-end RB2, high-end RB3. Like, range of outcomes-wise, that could have happened. That was unheard of like 5 or 6 years ago from a player with that profile who's that small, right? It's just that he can be that efficient off of 10 to 12 touches, and since the RB2 grouping is so weak, he can elevate himself and be sort of in that discussion. And I think that's what we see with this class is a lot of guys, not necessarily Keaton Mitchell types, but just a lot of guys who will play a really strong tandem role. Like, everyone's yeah. joking about Blake Corum going to LA, right? Because Harbaugh's there. But like, look at him versus Gus Edwards. That's a great tandem. Like, that's a yes. that's a perfect tandem to have. Now, like, now there's actual like reason to believe that Corum would go beyond the connection with Harbaugh to go to a team like LA. And Corum can be an RB2 in that environment, hypothetically, right? Or look at Jalen Wright. Jalen Wright is someone who I don't think necessarily profiles to be a true, true bell cow in the league, but he's got enough speed. He has enough versatility. He can step in and be a 1B in an offense and still give you RB2 type production. So I think what that means is if you look at the dynasty landscape right now and you look at that grouping, and this is why it was really hard to invest in like the Tajay Spears. Again, I know that this is like all hindsight BS because Tony Pollard's there now, all that kind of stuff. But like, just read the guide. It came out before Tony Pollard, signed there. But like, it was hard to like go really hard into those players because we have a class that could just be those players, right? Could just be a Spears type. And I know that like, we're all like, well, Spears is really good. Spears had plenty of warts coming in last year. Like, he doesn't have any ACLs. Like, there's problems that we can point to with Tajay Spears and say, he's not a true bell cow, or he won't be a true bell cow in the NFL. I think there's a lot of that in this class. So to Ray's point, no true elite guy, but plenty of guys who are going to come out of nowhere. Like, I love Isaiah Davis, for instance. Like, I think Isaiah Davis could be an RB2 in fantasy football. He could have a, like, why can't Isaiah Davis, if he does hit like an 85th percentile outcome, do what Rashad White did last year in an offense that doesn't have competition in his backfield? He could do something like that. So I just think that that's the more rational way of sort of looking at this class, instead of just saying they're all bad, I don't want them. There are going to be some hits, and there's going to be guys that fall into the right spots, and they can be relevant in fantasy.
Shane, I want to ask you, and then I want to kind of open it up to everybody to talk about this topic. So I think JJ made a really good point with that, is that there are running backs that could be the running backs that we already value right now as the innings eaters, the threshold guys, the Tony Pollards, the Aaron Joneses, the Derrick Henrys. Like, a lot of those guys have been around. They're proven. But we kind of feel like unless you have top six or better upside, unless you have like, I can win my league upside, at least for me, I want to roster construct around just having enough of those guys to get through a season. Because I don't know which ones are going to smash and outperform their value. I don't know which ones are going to end up being Damian Pierce and they go away, even though I was drafting them inside the top 24 running backs or whatever. So Shane, I want to ask you how that has changed your dynasty mindset in terms of you look at your team, and I know you have your biases. There's guys you like and then guys you don't like, even at running back. But how does that change when you're looking at like drafting some of these running backs as well? Because you may sit there and go, okay, I can see where Trey Benson could end up being, you know, the next Joe Mixon, right? You could squint and go, maybe they could be similar. But the price is probably fairly similar in terms of what you're going to have to pay. And if you miss, what happens when you miss? You're left with Tank Bigsby. Maybe you're left with Kendre Miller, Chase Brown. Where, okay, someone will take those guys. but we don't even consider them in the category of like, all right, I know I can start this guy at some time during the year. So how do you reconcile that? Like building a running back room? Cause it's not as easy as, you know what? I saw where Aaron Jones landed. I'm just going to go buy him. If you do that, you're going to lose because you're buying falling knives. You know what I mean? You're buying bad assets. So I don't want to be overexposed, but how do you reconcile that when you're building a running back room, Shane?
Shouldn't you always be moving any non-elite running backs for the most you can get? So anytime Zach Moss pops off, see ya. I mean, you got to be disciplined, right? Because it's hard in season. You're like, dude, Zach Moss just gave me three running back 1 weeks in a row. And now you're probably crowing because you're like, dude, he just signed with Cincinnati. That doesn't normally happen. What normally happens is a dude gives you 3 good weeks. You never hear from him again. And you go, I really wish I would have traded that dude. But everybody will remember James Robinson because he had 1 good year. But they won't remember the 18 other running backs that gave you running back 1 weeks during the season that you could have sold high on at any point. So we've talked about it. My only bias is I want dudes that can put up crooked numbers. That's Brees, Bijan, Devon Achane, Jahmyr Gibbs, CMC, even if he's old. And I think that's it, right? Five, that's it. That's
Kyren, no Kyren for you?
Kyren, Steve's but I'm not going
to. I got a question, because if you don't say Kyren, I got a question for the panel that I think we need to discuss. I think we need to discuss, and I think the people will like it. So is Kyren in that top six? Is he in that elite tier?
I don't know that I'm willing to pay for him, and I should be, because based off his efficiency last year, and I don't even care about the drop in work that we're expecting, because he was super efficient, and I think he's going to be really good this year. Part of it is I don't know that there's the resale value, right? Because we've talked about trying to move him for like the 106, 107, and people look at you like, basically a penis is growing out of your forehead when you try to make that deal. But if I were to offer them Brees Hall for that, they would lose their minds. Now, mind you, Kyren absolutely blew Brees Hall out of the box in fantasy last year. Like, it wasn't particularly close. Not the peripherals or any of that. I don't even know that. Just looking at the scoring. So yes, Kyren should be up there, and Kyren's probably a better buy than the other guys. If I can get him for 107, why would I give up 104 for Bijan? So I'll add him to the list, but only in a sneaky way if I can get him at a decent cost.
Well, I want to ask you about this because you bring up this crooked numbers. What do you mean by crooked numbers? Is that a season-long crooked number, or is that a weekly crooked number? Because I would argue weekly crooked numbers, guys like Jaylen Warren can put up a crooked number. Guys like Tajay Spears can put up a crooked number. Tell Chase Brown put up a crooked number. Alvin Kamara can put up 5 crooked numbers in a year, but we don't value him anywhere close to how we value Devon Achane. So we talk about, okay, there's a difference between the two, but yet we also don't want to value any running back value long-term either. So why would somebody like Kamara not even be mentioned, but Achane is RB4, RB5? Talk about that. What do you mean by crooked numbers, Shane? Crooked meaning weekly, season-long? Define that for everybody.
Well, it's kind of both, right? But there's Devon Achane's going to do it way more than Jaylen Wright. He's going to do it way more than Tajay Spears. He's going to do it multiple times, whereas, I don't know, it's the same name, whatever random running back you just named. He's going to give you 1-2 good weeks, I think. Devon Achane, we've already seen it. I know it's only 1 season. What we can expect out of that guy on a weekly basis when he's playing. And I'm willing to take the losses on the 4 to 5 weeks that he's not playing. Whatever. Those spike weeks are pretty much every week that he plays. Bijan, that's more of a projection than anything, really. Brees, we saw some monster weeks out of him. CMC, it goes without saying what that dude is, right? That's a dude that could put up super flex quarterback 1 numbers every week. Like, just do it consistently every week. And a Kamara, I'd pay price for him. I'll pay a second for Kamara. He's one of the few older running backs that I'll go, you know what? Let me pay you a second for him instead of trying to move him for a second.
Y'all, that ain't that. The question was why. Why is that one value here and this one ain't? It's not that damn complicated. It's the same thing that this game has always been about. It's youth. It's capital. Like, it's because Achane is the young guy. And people think that I'm going to get this for the next 6 years, right? Ain't nobody in their right mind thinking.
Nobody thinks you're getting 6 years of production out of a running back. Not since.
Listen, it is a figure of speech. The point is, people think they're getting multiple Devon Achane spike weeks every season for the foreseeable future. Whereas somebody like James Conner or Alvin Kamara, you look and you're like, yeah, last year could have been the best year. That's why people value that one more than the other, because they feel it's going to last a little bit longer. everybody has a value. You would value, you wanted James Conner and Alvin Kamara. What you would pay for that thing, what you would actually want to invest in that asset is one thing. Value, everybody in their right mind knew or should have known once Kamara came back, he was getting the damn ball every time. And that's exactly what he did, and he smashed for you. Now, what do you want to pay for that? That's an entirely – you value him because you know he's going to score you points because the name of the game is the win. You want to win the leagues. You got to score them points to win the league, and you know those assets will help you score points. You know Mike Evans is going to help you score points, but you don't want to invest in the thing that nobody outside of a few teams in your league that are actually contending are going to want. It's youth. It's all – it is youth. It's youth, it's draft capital, and it's a belief that they, the dynasty manager, will get sustained success out of these guys for multiple years. That's what it is, man.
I mean, the market dictates what I'm going to pay. I'm not going to go above the market.
And the, like market, saying, the market chain, prices the get set by that belief, though, I right? The price gets set by the belief.
And I'm just a consumer. So if I know that if I can go out and buy Breece Hall, and if things go south in season, assuming he doesn't blow another ACL, and I can probably sell him at 95% of what I bought him at, I'm willing to do that. As opposed to another running back that Kamara, for example, like I won't pay first for him because if he blows his ACL, well, he's just done. You know what I mean? Forever. Breece Hall is probably a bad example on that since he already did it once. But you know what I mean? You get the point. And it is partly the age. You know, it's he's a 28, 29-year-old running back. After 26, they're all old to me. I don't know. So I stopped clocking their age, to be honest with you, because they're already living on borrowed time. But no, your point's well taken, 100% well taken.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to spend 3 more minutes talking about this. I want to ask JJ this question and everyone else can chime in because I think it's really important. I know, JJ, you're super calculated about roster construction and structurally picking a team based on the price, but then also the format. We did that whole series last year talking about our Scott Fishbowl teams, if anyone saw that. Neither of us won, but it was fun walking through why we build our teams differently. And I think there was some science behind it. It wasn't just pick players we like. It was... I'm thinking the flow of the draft is going to be this way. So just kind of knowing what you know about Dynasty, let's just take like a cookie cutter 12 team start 10 super flex. Nothing crazy with the scoring. Like what does your and I'll make it even more challenging, Noni. You cannot have one of the anchors, Bijan, Breece, or Jahmyr Gibbs. You can maybe have CMC, but what is kind of like your ideal running back room look like there? Understanding like you don't want to allocate a ton of cost to you don't want 5 Ken Walkers and Travis Etienne's because like there's probably too much there given the volatility. Like what would your ideal mix look like aside from like a zero RB, carry a bunch of bench ones? Like what would your ideal mix of these everybody else's, the RB2s, the guys that are rookies? Like what would kind of your mix look like? Like
the am I competing in this scenario?
You are never not competing. You're just trying to kind of build together a running back room every year. Yeah. But also you're not looking at it like I want it to last 3 years. Like I want to just have fluid assets where I can go back to the market and turn them in every year. What would it look like for you? And I'll ask Brayden Payne the same question.
I mean, I'll be honest. So number one, I think the number one thing to always keep in mind is where you're deficient in your starting lineup, you should be robust on your bench, right? So if I lack running backs, which I would, I'm just going to have as many darts as I possibly can sitting on my bench with, you know, day three guys or what have you. For understandably, you know, if I am focused on like a day three back, knowing in the back of my head, probabilistically, that these guys are only going to have 1 year of value,
right? Like, that's just generally how it's going to go. And so, you know, like Chase Brown, for instance, drafted him last year just because of the what ifs of like what could happen if Joe Mixon leaves, all that kind of stuff. And I didn't mind Chase Brown as like a prospect either, but like, now's the time where you can then cash in, right? Or you can, you know, I'm not necessarily looking to use that asset as much as I would cash in that asset for potentially moving on to someone that would be a little bit more usable here in 2024 and have a more reasonable outcome, like a Kamara or something, and go that route to get more stability out of that position. Because for as much as a projection might like or not like whatever projection system you're looking at, a Chase Brown type, there's so much volatility to that projection. I'm going to want some stability there to even things out. So like from like a startup standpoint, trying to just kind of get as from a volume standpoint, as many young backs as possible that I'm going to throw darts at. You know, I can look at hits, I can look at misses, you know, obviously like hits have been like Pacheco in the past, or, you know, Chase Brown last year now has obviously gained some value and you can at least do something with that. Plenty of misses too. Like I drafted like a lot of Izzy Abanacanda before stuff happened last year, you know, like stuff like that's going to happen as well. But I'm gobbling all that up at the start from a startup standpoint. And then you just slowly turns and churn some of that hits into some of the more, you know, the established James Conner type guys, you know, you're saying without using elite players, because I'm not going to cheat with the question and with the answer, you know, try to churn them for those like James Conner type players. And then still, you know, cross portfolio, you know, I held on to a decent amount of Pacheco, for instance, because I wanted to still be able to, there is still that outcome for some of these guys, right? Like there's still a reasonable, you know, RB2 type outcome for some of these players that I can still hold and, you know, kind of get the best of both worlds by selling and holding. So, you know, if I'm doing it in one league, I'm probably not necessarily approaching it that way. It's a lot easier to do that whenever you have a plenty of them that you can sort of work the portfolio and have enough shares, you know, across the portfolio of those like Pacheco types. But that's generally how I'm working it, right? Like I'm trying to keep a good number of youthful players on the bench, especially rookies, and then immediately flipping them after something, there's some sign of life from those guys, like a Damian Pierce or something like that, right? Where you know that there's going to be, or you potentially know there's going to be that year one production from a situation standpoint, a spot standpoint, you can buy into that. That's why I don't really buy into the idea that situation just like doesn't matter at all. Even though my models aren't looking at situation and stuff, like you can't say that you can't say that JSN going literally anywhere else would be the same fantasy asset and dynasty asset right now as he is in Seattle, right? Like you can't say that Damian Pierce going somewhere else outside of Houston that year one would be the same asset. It's fine to say there's some subjectivity here, right? And so I do think that you can use that to your advantage, because our goal is to gain value year one to year two with these guys, period. Like we want, of course we want production, of course we want all that, but we want the value gain. And the value gain still has to do with, you have to get into that redraft mindset and say, this guy is in a good spot situationally. I know what his projection looks like. I'm going to buy into that a little bit and spend a third round pick, rookie pick on him. And then hopefully I can flip that the following year.
Ray, I know you playing a lot of best ball. I know the roster construction is a little different. You do not want to be holding 15 Izzy Abanacandas in a best ball league because you're taking weekly zeros. So it does differ between best ball and lineup, but this isn't the place to kind of go through all the nuances of that. Any additional thoughts, though, on kind of the way to play it, like the constant shuffle? What do you think?
JJ, I think you are 100% correct, man. Situation absolutely matters. I was listening to Shannon Sharp and Ocho, their show. I was listening to them today, and they were talking about Mac Jones. And I'm just listening to former players sit, like you just hear them talk about, hell yeah, the coach matters and what's going on, and like the things that are happening absolutely matter. Like they do. And one of the things that I've been thinking about, not, I am not technically skilled enough to do this, JJ, but there are consistent patterns across certain offensive coordinators across the NFL. You know, you look at the Rams, they're running 11 personnel 90%+ of the time. You look at how they deploy the running back, whether it's Todd Gurley, Kyren Williams, under these certain systems, there are patterns. And you look at those situations and those similarities, and those teams thrive. Those players from a fantasy production standpoint thrive in those situations. I don't think we as a fantasy community understand. Like, what we do is this, right? Oh, they drafted – the Pittsburgh drafted a couple of offensive linemen next year. The offense has got to be better next year than it was this year. Without really knowing, oh, such and such got hired. Oh, this has got to be – no issue with Jalen Hurts with Brian Johnson. It'll be just fine as Shane Steichen left. No issues, right? And then you sit back and you look and you're like, damn. Like, you look at how successful Shane Steichen was, even with the Gardner Minshew, how successful those players were, Pittman and company, without a tight end, without a running back. How, you just look at those situations, and I just wonder if there's a way to not predict efficiency, but be able to make some stronger bets when we're making these decisions on the Puka Nacua is going to a Rams situation, right? You know, I feel like this needs to be a part of the game a little bit more than it is, but it's tough, right? It's not an easy task. I know you know that, but I just want to throw that out there for food for thought, because I just don't think we know enough about these situations, and they probably matter a hell of a lot more than somebody's opinion on if Malik Nabers is actually good or not, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just to add to that, like what I like to try to do is, like, I'm obviously not a football player. Like I don't play in professional football, right? But I am a human, and I know that certain situations that I've been placed in are either good or bad for my body, my mental health, what have you, right? If you go to a really good school system or something like that, you're probably going to be better off than getting into a certain college or being more successful down the line, all that good stuff, because the situation matters, right? For that individual thing within your life. Why would that not matter then for how these guys perform in football, right? In their job. If you guys have, I mean, all of us have worked, we have jobs, and in that environment, my boss sucks, it's me, but in that environment, you know, you can be in a good or bad one, and it can totally impact the way that you're working, the way that how efficient you are, how good you are. It's no different in the NFL. It's still a thing. It's just because it's a game and that we are looking at this in a relatively dehumanizing way. Just because it's a game doesn't mean that those aspects aren't real. And I also think it's okay to sit back and in hindsight, look at someone like Puka Nacua and say, yo, this dude's really good. He balled out year one. Okay, but also the system and the place that he was in was absolutely perfect for Puka Nacua, right? It's okay. It's okay to say that Devon Achane would not be Devon Achane not in Miami. It's okay to say that.
But absolutely,
that's where he is right now. That's the situation. So we got to play into it. And so I think that people want it to just be this like talent-based thing. And it is talent. Like talent can shine and all that. But at the same time, the environment, the situation has to be part of your equation here and the way that you're looking at both these rookies and guys who are like in the league right now.
Shane, we got 30 seconds, so we're going to bring Clay back. Okay, other than sell every running back that is not Jahmyr Gibbs, Breece Hall, or Bijan Robinson, or Christian McCaffrey. Any final tips you want to give the people in just terms of building running back rooms, this class versus what's out there right now? Anything you haven't said that you just have been dying to say in the last 10 minutes?
No, it's the same thing as always. Just like JJ was saying, you get a bunch of them. Some of them hit, you move them, rinse and repeat. I mean, that's all it is. It's not rocket science. It's literally a process. Just continue to follow it.
Well, I brought Clay back. I don't know. He said just bring him back to the stream, and it covered up Ray. So I don't know where Clay went. Clay, you here? You back?
Is anyone here?
Yeah, I'm here. Where's Ray? Did you
just I think you're on top of Ray.
Well, no, that's why I was
on top of first and last time.
The logistics of running the stream, I was going, wait a second, am I going to bring Clay back? And where does everybody else go? But no, take it over, my friend.
No, you're good. I was enjoying that conversation in the background. That's for sure. I was already hitting up my editor. Hey, your first thing you're doing tomorrow is making a dope-ass show out of that. So, no, very cool. So, JJ, I know you got to bounce, but I did want to bring this up. You had 97 of our supporters pre-order your late round prospect guide, which is so kick-ass, and we'll do the contest drawing and stuff after you leave. But can you help them out by just giving them a heads up? What is the easiest way for them to consume that guide? Point them in the right direction so they know how to use it properly.
Yeah, you can read it on any device that you have. It's nice and hopefully pretty responsive. It's just a PDF, so it's nice and easy. You know, I think that the way that I lay things out in the beginning of the guide with my models and sort of how I approach fantasy will give you an idea of what the rest of the guide and what the prospect profiles are all about, and how I'm not necessarily this like people assume that I'm this like super rigid, has to follow this process no matter what, but really it's about embracing variance, embracing volatility, and understanding that with the process of
of evaluating, because I think the if you are too rigid with prospecting, you're doing it wrong. It's just not a good approach with this stuff. So check it all out, layround.com. And you know, like I said, you get the model stuff, the prospect model stuff, prospect profiles, and then the year two stuff that we talked about earlier in the show too.
Well, thanks so much for joining, man. Thank you. Don't be a stranger. We'll be in touch. Really appreciate it. Big moment for the channel, bud.
Appreciate you guys.
All right. Thank you, JJ. We'll see you, man. Take it easy.
See you, JJ.
Later.
I was trying to say goodbye and my voice cracked. I was emotional.
You were emotional. Here, let me get our overlay on here. Let's see. Yeah. This is what we normally look like, right? Wow. How awesome was that? That was kick ass. I can't wait to go back.
And Ray just left.
He just left.
Well, you didn't have a spot on the screen for him.
Dude, you could have just switched it to group overlay. You were messing around with the overlay so much. Putting JJ back in the corner. No,
the group overlay doesn't work. It only shows four. So
weird. Anyway, yeah, it's all good. So yeah, good conversation there. I wanted to pull up so here's how I did it. We had the 97 entries that DM Shane, who looks very large on the screen right now for some reason. Are you much closer? There we go. What I did is I took those 97 names. I did a spin the wheel to get how many total? To get 20 football players to run on a 100-yard rush. Okay, 20 of them. The top 10 are going to be getting a spot in the listener league. Okay. And then the remaining 10 are going to do a race for a live roster review with Shane and Scott. And then the ones who don't win that are going to do a run for a peer-to-peer roster review. So a lot of words there. All right. A lot of words there, but hopefully that made sense. I'm going to share my screen. And you can talk while I'm doing this if you'd like, by the way, make it decent podcasting.
I mean, Shane, what do you want to talk about? Normally we have hammers filling the time. Anything on your mind? You've made today?
I stopped listening. I did one deal, and this is very anti me. I traded Christopher Olave for Christian McCaffrey.
Did you? Ooh, what
Yeah.
So what was the scenario? Just a basic breakdown of why you made that trade. Obviously, you need a hammer to win.
I mean, my wide receivers, really not the reason you shouldn't do it, but my wide receivers are fine. I got Puka, a couple other really good wide receivers, absolutely no running backs. Like I just set the lineup again. That's why I love Sleeper. You can set the lineup whenever you want. But I had Lat Murray in one of the starting spots and another gentleman that's no longer in the National Football League either. That was one of those teams where I took a bunch of shots on running backs and none of them hit. So that does happen too. Like, I don't want to pretend that like every time we try to hit on running backs and hits. I think there's a small PPC. And obviously, I talked about I wanted to move off of some of Chris Olave because he was still my most highest rostered wide receiver, well over 20%. Not well over, but over 20%. So just wanted to make a move. And if I was going to do it, that's probably one of the few running backs I would do it for. Like I said, there's probably a total of four or five of them that I would have done it for. But lesson learned, right? So he offers me this deal the other day, and I countered and said, I need Christian McCaffrey back with a third rounder. And he rejected it and sent me a message like, stop being cute. I said the same offer, and he sat on it for a day, I think, to teach me a lesson. And then he accepted it today.
That definitely annoys me when people sit on offers. You get an offer. I mean, I've sat on offers before, but I'll usually say, okay, I'm looking for this, or like I'll acknowledge it, but I just got it done today and the person sat on the offer for 3 days waiting for free agency stuff to happen, and one of them included me getting Gardner Minshew because I'm obsessed with trading for backup quarterbacks. So I was on a Mac Jones buy spree. Nice. And of course all those assholes out there won't sell Mac Jones when he gets traded to the Jags, and they see Charles Chill FFB ask for Mac Jones and it's like, oh man, can I get a second? Like, hell no, you can't get a second. Are you kidding me? I'm buying him as a backup on the Jags, and you've probably already said he's bad. So throw him into this deal. But I had one with Minshew included as well, like just trying to get two backup QBs. Dude, let it sit for 3 days.
Yeah.
And as soon as Minshew signs, that one gets rejected. But yeah, I also had other ones where there were different backup QBs other than Minshew, and he sat on those for another day, rejected the Minshew one. He's like, oh, no, I'm not doing the Minshew one. We ended up getting it done, but it's just like, I sent four offers. The goal was to get it done now.
Get the trade done. Yep.
And it was sat on three, rejected the one when Minshew signed, sat on it again, waiting for free agency to see if any of these backup quarterbacks get a job or anything. And then finally, I'm just like, dude, pull the trigger, or, you know, let's walk away. And we ended up getting it done. But still, that's definitely one of those. We could do a trade annoyances 101.
Yeah.
No,
but for sure, fun show.
So the dude that did this, Janner, it was literally, he messaged me like, stop being cute. So then when I sent the same offer to him, he's just like, whatever, I'll let it sit there for a day. But this is a dude I make trades with like all the time easily. So no hard feelings there.
Yeah. So I sent Ray a message. Sorry for kicking him off, asking him to come back on. In the meantime, let's hit a hammer here from Sean Salka. Thank you very much. It's a 12-team start nine half PPR. We have Lamar, Watson, Goff, Carr at quarterback, Bijan, Gibbs, Kamara, Barkley, Algier. And then he has Tyreek Hill, Keenan, Alave, Pittman, Marquise Brown, JSN, and D-Hop. At tight end, Kelce and Njoku, no picks, lost in the ship. Should I be worried about certain areas of my team given age / lack of picks? Any actionable moves that you think would help extend competing or just hold firm?
I'm going to be brutally honest on this answer. You don't have that good of a roster, but you have way too much in the quarterback position. So if you go back to the first part, just want to highlight this point that I would make, because we talked about this a lot in the Discord today about how to play these new QBs that have just gotten bridge jobs like the Minshews, Sam Darnold. Here's the truth. They're no different than Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith, Derek Carr. They're all the same. And I don't really want to pay for quote unquote job security. Maybe you consider a guy like Baker or Cousins a small tier ahead of them. But if you go back to the first part again, Clay.
Yeah, of course.
He's got
right here
a weak roster, but he's got Lamar, Watson, Goff, and Carr. Do we need Watson and Goff?
No.
Do we need Lamar Jackson here?
Yeah, start nine. Yes.
Well, okay. Then I think the question is, with no picks, we have two tight ends and a half PPR. Yeah. We don't need two tight ends. Pick your lane, Kelce or Njoku. And then we have some old pieces. We have too many running backs, right? Bijan, Gibbs, Kamara, Barkley. I mean, we have good assets. But this is a team where what I don't want to see is a roster like this, too many quarterbacks, too many running backs, too many tight ends, no picks. So I don't care what you do, but I think you go down the line and you go, all right, I need to roster construct better and get some of this value off my team in the wrong spots. So trade Bijan or Gibbs. Can you get Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb for Bijan or Gibbs? Can you get a deal like that where you buy yourself a need? Because right now we have Keenan Allen as our wide receiver too. No. Chris Olave. The point is I want to shift some of the value away, but I'm guessing he's probably hesitant of like, what do I move? And that's all. I'm not even going to get into specific deals. Get value out of running back, get rid of the tight end, get value out of quarterback, get more flexibility. You can still win. You have plenty to win. But the fact that he lost in the ship just speaks to the variance.
But he had Tyreek Hill and Chris Olave and Michael Pittman at the wide receiver, right?
Yeah, he had a good squad, but I see where Scott was getting at. It seemed like, he doesn't have any picks. He needs to get some of that back to insulate himself. But yeah, he had a great team. I mean, you can see why he made it to the championship. So he's close.
But yeah, you definitely want to move off of one of those running backs because...
And all those QBs. I mean, he's hoarding like quarterbacks.
I hate moving off of Lamar in this, but the point is no one else is going to pay you what you want for Goff. No one's going to give you a lot for Watson anyway. So if you are going to make a deal where you get, say, a future pick and a really productive piece back, it's going to have to be Lamar. You're going to have to bite the bullet, or you just ride this out and go, we're going to try to win it. I was in the championship last year. I'll try to win it this year. And if Keenan Allen retires on me and then Tyreek Hill retires the year after that, then I'm just dead. This team's dead. I'll rebuild then.
Well, and it's not even about the players. I'm going to give like a 2-minute example here that people are going to probably go on like WTF, but you have a house. It's worth $400,000, let's say. You don't need $4 million of insurance. That's what this kind of roster has. You don't need Bijan, Gibbs, Kamara, and Barkley to win. You don't need Jared Goff, Deshaun Watson, and Derek Carr as your QB 2, 3, and 4 to win. This team just has way too much insurance. But what happens to insurance over time, Shane, if you don't use it? You pay, you never use it. And you go, what the hell did I pay for insurance for 12 years? So
I got to be honest.
I had the insurance.
Bad question to ask Shane because he's used it many times.
I've so taken for way more than I've ever paid. Like, not even close, dude. I added
bad example. Bad example.
Bad example.
The point is, like, you have to look at your teams and go, okay, it's a start nine. The fact that team didn't win the championship highlights this point. Because I bet you pull up Dynasty Daddy or you pull up any calculator, they're going to go, damn, that's the best roster in the league. That has the best assets.
It starts at issues. Is that what you're going to get to? It's too much of that?
No, it's that I'm holding value in places that I don't need to hold it. I don't need Derek Carr on this team. So am I going to get anything for Derek Carr? No. But I don't want Derek Carr anyway. Take what I can get. Take future value of some sort. And sometimes the future value doesn't line up with exactly what you want. So pivot to another player. Can I sell Carr? Probably no. Can I sell Watson? Probably no. Can I sell Goff? People in our Discord telling me Goff's worth the 107 or 108, 109. On that team, give me the 109 for Jared Goff. Yeah. I don't care what he's worth. Give me the pick that I can maybe turn into a future pick and store it for later for a guy I don't even need. So it's really about balancing. Like, we see a lot of these contending teams. One or two times a stream, we get a question. Contender, no picks till 27. Stack team.
Yeah.
Start 10. Okay, yeah, great. Great team. But you have 17 deep on a start 10. Players 11 through 17 in week 17 are not helping you win. So move some of that value to more flexibility in the future. Pot rant. No.
Keep Pounding got us two hammers, and this is the last one that I have in the hopper. Then we'll just see where the evening takes us. So thank you very much. It is a 12-team start 10. Lamar, Love, Watson at quarterback. Ramondre, Najee, and Trash Cans at running back. DJ Moore, Ayuk, Pittman, London, Judy, and QJ, a wide receiver, at tight end, Kelsey. We have the 106, 107, 201, no 25 first. Thoughts on any moves? Shane, you start this one. What do you think, bud? On mute. Nice.
Well, I was reading the comments anyway. Go back to the first page. Is this the old page?
This is the first page.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. That's the whole thing.
Sorry.
Scott, are you up to speed on this? Shane is literally reading right now. 12-team, start 10, super flex.
It's another team where we have two QBs that are valued in the top 12, and Deshaun Watson is the QB3. And I said it this morning, I'll continue to say it. The QB3 is the worst spot on your team. You can hold any value. You can win the QB3 spot with cans, with backups. I don't know how many roster spots he didn't say. But if I see a team like this, I'm immediately looking, okay, what do I think about Watson? Do you like Watson? If you say, no, I hate him, he's not going to finish in the top 20 ever again in his career, then sell him. And it's not all I have to get a first. It's sell him for something that helps me. But the bottom line is I can beat having Watson as my QB3 by having 10 backup quarterbacks. And I couldn't tell you who half of them are. But I bet you this team can get a guy like Drew Lock for nothing. Tyrod Taylor for nothing. Nothing. And the key is not to go pay for those guys. It's accumulate them over time and never store value in your QB3 spot. So that's an immediate place that's a move you can just pick up free future value. He doesn't have a 25 first. Think that way, though. We could go five more minutes on this. I think the rest of them, I mean, running backs are fine. Receivers, I mean, sell QJ for any pick. And then you're probably just picking, I don't know, Bowers, Adunze, McCarthy, like what best asset available. Yeah, you don't have any needs. Best asset available, I'd say, at 6 and 7.
Yeah. I mean, because it wouldn't be a bad thing to have Bowers to backfill Kelsey, right? Sure. But you can also be flexing him at the same time. It's no tight end premium was listed, but let me ask you that real quick. Is Bowers still flexible in a non-tight end premium?
It's a construction thing. Do I want Bowers and Kelsey? Those two high of assets here? Not necessarily. But what I better see is if you take the Bowers bet, you better not have another tight end on your team. Not one. Don't care who it is. I don't care what you paid. I don't care if you really like Tucker Kraft. He needs to go. So that if you want it, I agree with taking Bowers is a perfect bet to say, man, how long is Kelsey going to last? You know what I mean? Like, I think it is a perfect pairing, but it's also a pairing where you go in a non-PPR league. Once I have those two, like, that's my tight end room for the next 2-3 years. And if Kelce expires, then I get another one. But a lot of times people will go, do I take Bowers? I have Cade Otton and I have Hunter Henry and I have David Njoku and I have Travis Kelce. Should I take Brock Bowers? No, it doesn't fit that construction.
Let me ask you this real quick, Scott, because we were talking about the quarterbacks and storing too much value in the QB3. I've got a couple instances where, yeah, let me think about my home league, for example. I've got CJ Stroud, Pat Mahomes, and Josh Allen. What to be able to get your, and it's a start nine half PBR. This is my home league, first league ever. What's the lowest you'd sell a guy like, sure, I put them all on the block, but let's assume Stroud is the most desirable and he is right now, let's say. What is the least that you would sell him to be able to get a hammer at wide receiver or running back?
I mean, if you're starting at the very, very, very top like that,
yep,
then I think you're probably just more methodical with what you would take. But if the right deal came along and it was another elite player and the deal was 85 to 90% of what you expected, you'd have to really have a conversation like, okay,
so
I wish I could get more than Jamar Chase and a 25 first for my Josh Allen, but am I ever getting another deal like that? Ever? Is there another team in the league that would even make that offer? And if the answer is no, I think you do have to kind of consider like, what is my strategy? Can I get one of those guys and 104? Because now what you've done is you've effectively added a hammer at another position. And now you have the choice. You can draft Jaden Daniels there if you want. And you're in the right, you're back in the same spot, but guess what? You're not holding as high of an asset. You've basically tiered down off of Josh Allen. And now you can go, okay, can I tier down off of Jaden Daniels? And can I get Jared Goff in a first? Can I then, you know what I mean? You cascade it down until you get to the lowest common denominator of what you need to win. Cause you don't need all three of those guys to win. But I don't want to go, I'll just liquidate Josh Allen for Jamar Chase because that's the best I can get. Got to be a little more selective.
So let's take an exact example. So he has it's either the 107 or 108. Let's call it the 107. Okay. He's got the 107. He's got Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I assume he has a 25 first. Are you selling, again, I've got Allen, Mahomes, and Stroud. Are you selling Stroud for Amon-Ra St. Brown, that 107? And that's 25 first. You're getting no QB in return. I think he has Tannehill.
Yes.
But okay, so let me say this. Let me say this too, because this is a big part. I've been playing keep away from him because he is the freaking rock solid contender. He got bounced in the first round, which is lucky. He's, you know, in terms of the Dynasty GM tool and Dynasty Daddy and all, he's at the top. I'm second. But so I would be giving him, he would have Herbert, Dak, and Stroud. But whatever, he then has too much value on his bench, right? I'm trying to talk through this because I'm down to send this probably, sucker right now.
I just want to say it's nice that Scott's coming to my side of this argument where we don't want to be having expensive ass QB3 just sitting on my bench going, hi, guys, I want to play.
Spreading ashes and they can't. The Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, that'll be his problem. That'll be his problem. I'd make that deal. Like Scott said, dude, you're getting the 107. So even if you wanted another quarterback, 107, you could probably get J.J. McCarthy. You could turn this into Amara, J.J. McCarthy, at 25 first at a minimum.
Not to be fair, what Clay's getting in that package is a pretty fun package of three assets, right? Now, it is not fun to grind, what's the difference between Derek Carr and Sam Darnold? Like that probably doesn't get people's gears grinded when you're talking on this show about what the gap is between them, right? That's what I'm really meaning by QB3. Most people don't have your situation, Clay, so I wouldn't just go, all right, I'm going to just process tells me to sell them. But I think when you have the typical QB3, when I go, okay, my QB3 is Kirk Cousins. Okay, wait, what is the construction with Kirk Cousins? Is he just your really expensive insurance, or are you willing to go, okay, I can probably sell Kirk Cousins for a little more now than I ever have been in the last 9 months? I'm going to take advantage of getting what I can, but hey, maybe I want to get a Sam Darnold or a Gardner Minshew back in the trade. Because effectively, you're keeping the same thing, but you're shifting some of that value away from the asset that you're trying to get off of. That's the better example.
Okay. Here's the lowest you'd go, because I think this is a good conversation. Would you give CJ Stroud for Amon-Ra St. Brown and the 108? Because that's what he has. Would you go that low? Just 30 or 10 seconds, yes or no, because I will send out something that low
just to get Amon-Ra?
I would say no, only because I think what you have right now is it is a monopoly. When you have a company that's created a monopoly and it's that strong, then I would say no. Anything lower where you're kind of tearing down off of another piece and it's a little closer, then yes, but not here. I'm good with what you have. There's no rush for you to move that today.
Especially if he is a ridiculous team. Okay, let's do this. Let's pivot real quick. Scott, if you wouldn't mind fixing the overlay, I'm going to present my screen. We're just going to run this 100-yard rush to get the find out who the top 10. Top 10 is going to be, or I'm sorry, 1 through 10 in terms of place are going to have a spot in that listener league for this. These are all the downloaders of the prospect guide. And like I said, I went through a wheel, pressed the spin on the wheel for a long time to get 20. All right, here we go. So you see the names up here. I am going to move forward. We're going to shuffle it. What is it? 3 times, guys, is what you do on Sleeper and stuff people like to do.
I'd say okay. Once is enough, but sure.
We're not doing any kind of this. We're going to do fast. And then yes. I think the max, I don't like it to be like this mega crazy sprint there. Okay. I think we are ready to go. Let's start the rush. Good luck.
These are brutal to watch. Shane, I usually do the fastest because they are brutal to watch.
Yeah, oh. You're Mr. 2.5X. Ooh, probably a bot.
Oh, that guy's
nice one. Here comes Girth Brooks from our Discord.
We got Girth Brooks has not
Yanks
seen like
and
this. Well, the real scout, these guys, real scout fell out of the box.
These guys
not gonna make it.
You got to get top 10 here, everyone. Yanks so and is looking good. Go ahead, Shane.
I was going to say, what I've noticed that's really a hindrance to these runners is they keep stopping, which seems like a terrible idea.
This is what you would do, though. You're taking a little cigarette break every 17 yards.
Oh, someone almost finished. Oh, we got
the Real Frog with the W.
Yep.
Gang sent. So Real Frogs in the listener league.
Hudge loves pork. So definitely. Girth Brooks, too big for this race.
Girth Brooks is in our Discord. So
he's going to need a 12.
Who's it? Whose life really stuck for B. Sims the Jedi finished 11th.
Look at Pudge. Just missed the cut. Just he's going to finish.
He's going to have a heart attack. He's just
Shane. Right there. There's Shane. Yeah. You made it. All right.
Pudge loves pork. Still hasn't finished. Oh, come on,
Shane.
Come on.
He died.
20. So, there we go.
All right. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a screenshot of these top 10, and then we're going to talk more dynasty, and I'll load up the roster of you race with just 10 on very fast. Okay. Let's, I am going to switch back. Let me stop sharing for a second. Okay. What else we got? Shane says, I'm going to bed. You need to go to bed, Shane? You want to say
goodbye? I have some questions. Hey, here's a fun one.
Pull some stuff up for me. Thank you.
No one's talked about this lately. What am I doing with Fields? Oh, gosh. It sucks. You should have moved them before now. I will say this. I feel your pain because I have several MFL leagues. And quite frankly, I've been neglecting MFL like my first children that I don't talk to them or their mom. Completely forgot they existed. Went and checked them last night and go, son of a bitch, I got 3 Justin Fields on MFL leagues, don't I? So I was able to move one at least. I just traded him for Baker in a 16 team super flex. Bro, you're going to have to, it's almost take what you can get or you just hold him. But I don't know. He's a backup quarterback. I mean, the NFL has spoken.
I've got Aaron Rodgers in my inbox. I give Fields, get Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
Did you pay?
How gross is that?
Vice president.
I'm going to be buying Fields aggressively here very soon when he's valued at outside the top 25 QBs if he falls down that far. Because here's the reality. When anything positive happens, look at the hive mind right now that are defending the guy to the high heavens. It's like he's a victim of everybody in the world that has cost him the chance to be a franchise QB. When the reality, there's really nothing that's ever pointed signal-wise to say that he's anything but that. So I think you have essentially a group of people that if anything positive happens to Fields and you can get him at the second round price point, like you're going to be able to sell him. You're going to be able to sell him. There's going to be somebody that goes, oh man, here we go. Because I think it's fair to say, as critical as I've been about him, he's going to get another chance. What that looks like could be a four-game window where it's an impossible situation. Last year's Patriots. Here, buddy, go out and win seven games. And if you don't, you're never going to start again. But he's going to get another chance. So I think you want to have some when he gets low enough to where people realize he's not starting. He's one of the backup quarterbacks I want to collect, because as soon as anything possible, good happens, I can sell.
Here's the problem with him, though. The NFL seems to really not like him. Like, I don't even know if he gets a legit backup shot. Like, I don't know that. And there's only a few teams that he can actually back up for that it would make sense in their schemes, or at least the way their offenses are built. It's a limited.
I don't agree. I think the problem with Fields is right now is this.
You think he's running Kansas City's offense if Pat Mahomes goes down?
That's not what I mean. What I mean is the reason he's not been moved, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, is this. You trade a pick for him. Let's say someone has to give up a third for him.
Mm-hmm.
What do they want? Because right now, if you trade a pick for him, a day two pick, a second or a third, you better be getting multiple years, which means you got to pick up that option next year, which is $26 million, and it's guaranteed. So you are locked in on a guy you don't even want to start for that option. So I'm guessing the Bears are seeing him that way. Hey, guys, we're trading you Justin Fields, former first-round pick. You get him for 2 years on a still rookie contract. The teams that want him are going, yeah, we're getting a backup. We don't want to pick up his fifth-year option. We don't want to guarantee shit past this year. No, we'll give you a fifth. And the Bears are going, no. Like, I bet you right now the Ravens would send their comp pick, which is the late third, for Fields as the backup. But that'd be the most they would pay. I think the Eagles pick in the same spot. I bet you they would send that pick for Fields. But the Bears are probably going, I need more than a third. I'm not taking a fourth. And I think teams just don't want to reconcile with having to pick up that fifth-year option, because they want an investment if they're giving up a higher pick, and they're just not going to do it.
Yep. You ready for another run?
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Just pull up to...
Here, we got an inbox or something. We got an inbox offer. So he's got an Ultra Runner Al has an inbox offer of 105 and the 109 for his Gibbs in a 10-team super flex, except... We don't have a number of starters. There's 10 teams. I'm going to guess there's 9 to 10 starters. I could not imagine there being more than that. Yep. So let's just work under that assumption. It's a 10-team start, 10 super flex. Is the 105 and 109 enough to move off of Gibbs?
I would say no in a vacuum. Right. Just because it's a 10-teamer, I just don't value the 105, 106 picks as much. I just don't. 12-teamer, you'd have to consider this because it's a running back. I think that's probably the gap for me.
Right. It's 10 teams, start 10, and it's probably less than that if we're being honest. I'll probably just pass on this as well.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen here. Mind removing that. Thank you very much. Okay, so I've got it at the faster speed here. We've got 10 left, the 10 remainders here. So this will be this is an awesome freaking present too. Live roster review with Shane and Scott. So here we go. Let's see if the, what was it? Pudge pork. Let's see.
Ooh, back in.
Let's see. Girth Brooks. Come on. Ooh. He's too heavy between the legs.
Oh, Pudge loves pork. Come on. What? Must have taken a big shit before this race. Fresh. Moving a lot better.
Look at Wall Fresh putting in work. This is what we train for. Oh, look at
Jedi finished.
Oh, glorious. Glorious managed to sneak out Wall Fresh. Okay, so it'll just take me a bit. I wish we were faster to do this, but okay. Then I just have to run the last one. So you guys just have to talk about one more trade, and then we will give out the peer-to-peer roster review, and then we're done. All right?
Let's go.
So let me stop sharing.
Okay, so this is awkward because I thought that was it, so I unstarred everything.
It's all good. It's all good.
So inbox offer. Is there any trades? How does no one have trades in here? Come on, people. There's literally not one trade in the last 147 comments.
Okay, there was a question earlier that I wanted to hit, and I'll just answer it real quick. But someone asked, what do you do if we've covered this ad nauseum, but Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you just resign to the fact that if you're holding Treylon Burks or you're holding Jahan Dotson or you're holding Jameson Williams, what do you do, Shane, if you have those guys? Anything to get rid of them? I mean, give something actionable, because a lot of people have those players. We see them listed all the time on rosters. Mm-hmm. They still list them as assets. But if you click on a team, it's a start 11, start 10, you see one of those guys, like, give us a little bit of a like preview on Shane says. What would Shane do if he sees Jahan Dotson? Like, what are the clicks and keystrokes look like?
Here's the
problem. 60 seconds on that.
Jahan Dotson has no path to being liked in fantasy again. He's already shown that he's a trash can. Like, he's shown it's set in stone, and he's not sexy. Like, for whatever reason, J-Mo still has sex appeal. You saw it after last year. He had one good game and people were blowing up our comments like he's coming through. I'd actually hold him and wait till that one big game, because I guarantee you can get a second out of someone for him. I don't know why. There's no legitimate reason. Quentin Johnston, I'll hold him too, because right now I think the best I could do is a fourth. If I can get a third for him, I'll move him. Otherwise, I'll hold him and see again. Is someone going to get all super excited in that high-flying Jim Harbaugh offense of Quentin Johnston having a breakout game?
How hard do you grind on something like that, Shane? Are you like sending Dotson in a third for a second? Like, are you that obsessive with trying to get rid of those kind of guys? QJ in a third for a second? Yes.
So this morning, actually, I spent the morning sending out Devin Singletary's and a third for second round offers in every league. I think I got one of those.
Yeah.
At least one of you rejected.
201 or 202 I happen to have. I know.
Anyone that had a second, and then, you know, then anyone that didn't, they got a 25 one. I went ahead and sent it to them. So, yeah. And if I'm in, we'll say 19 sleeper leagues, because that's where I did it, because I'm just neglecting MFL again. They're not getting any child support. But if I can do that in 19 leagues in the span of like 10 minutes, there's no excuse for people that are only in four leagues. You should be definitely grinding through that.
I just do what Jason did and got the 211 and a 25 second for Jahan Dotson.
Jesus.
From his grandparents.
Yeah.
I really love him.
All right, I'm going to share my screen. We're about to run this. The remaining nine, they caught their breath. We're about to run this sucker. All right, we're going to start the rush. This is for a peer-to-peer roster review, and it's with Conjure or Ty. They're our absolute stud reviewers. You're in good hands. All right, Shane, do the play-by-play. Go.
And I can't see because my contacts are completely dried out. Andrew Friedhoff is my underdog. McGonagall.
He was their dark horse.
Didn't McGonagall just win? Did I make that up? The Real Scout.
Oh.
No.
He sends the Jedi down there?
He came out of nowhere.
He did. Oof.
I wasn't looking at the right spot. B. Sims, the Jedi.
He's a Jedi. Yeah. So he just mind-tricked us to make us think that he finished first.
Screenshotting that. All right, rock and roll. So, yeah, we're basically done. But before everybody leaves, we are on with Fantasy Receipts next Tuesday. That is going to be an awesome show. I wanted to keep all the focus and stuff on this JJ stream tonight, which was kick ass, but it's going to be a different, very fun show with Fantasy Receipts. It is on the 19th, March 19th, again at 8:30 Eastern. But yeah, we're going to pull some of ours, roast the shit out of ourselves. We'll see. They're going to be in masks with voice scramblers and everything. It's going to be dope. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah,
I'm not even sure what to expect, honestly.
Oh, he and I are working very closely behind the scenes, dozens of DMs per day, actually. So,
all right.
Yeah, I would tell everybody listening and watching the over 5,000 people tuning in right now, but it will be a production.
Yes, it's going to be an event.
It will be an event or a production, and Shane and I will just be part of the cast. But other than that, I have no clue what to expect. So let's go.
I hope and expect to see my Baker Mayfield is QB2 take from right after Odell Beckham Jr. was traded to the Browns.
I said, listen, man, if you need me to point you to some takes, some brutal ones, I got you. I was like, just give me a heads up. I want to see what he comes with. But I mean, holy Daryl Henderson.
I mean, bro,
go back to the first month of Trades and Fives videos
when they were awful quality and terrible audio, but some of the takes were bad. We can get into it next week, but I will never forget the advice video when Breece Hall tore his ACL. Nobody go look that up. It was just full of like
Shane selling him anything for Jameis.
Jameson, I mean,
panic.
George
Pickens, panic.
George Pickens was like the next level. If you could get that, I think we were even like, I mean, we were close to, it wasn't Breece Hall, but it was another running back. I think it was it Javonte maybe? But like the one where we were mentioning to sell for was like a bad range of like, you look back and you go, now the player we got didn't even last a season.
Luckily, those were the days where I didn't talk, like, period. And you know,
you can't take any blame for it. It's Scott. I got it.
No. And it's for better or worse. But yeah, last thing, and then we're going to get out of here. We do have 5,200 eyeballs in here. We're going to be doing something new this Thursday. Alan Seslowski, who I was on a Hammer stream with today from RotoWire, has a SiriusXM show. The guy's a total stud. We all love him. He's a fantastic host. Like, I look up to him. He says he looks up to me, whatever. Long story short, he is going to be on the Dynasty Trades in Five team, which is absolutely kick-ass, starting this Thursday. So on my birthday, I am no longer going to be in the middle on the Dynasty Trades in 5-minute trade shows, but I will very much still be on all these live streams and whatnot. Just not those. Alan's going to level it up. He'll be way better than me at it. And yeah, it's going to be, it's sad. It's sad because this is where we started, but it's going to be much better for the community and stuff. And I can focus on other shit. So rock on. Just to clarify,
Clay, you're not going anywhere on the regular streams. It's just the 5-minute trade shows where Alan's going to be hosting. Cause I already see some people going, oh my gosh, Clay is leaving.
No,
Trades in Five.
I will never leave.
Alan's our Thursday night
the live streams. Yeah. He's going to be Thursday night guy. And he's going to get more involved than just that. Very clearly. He's awesome. Yep. So
we're writing a movie. There's a movie. There's a script that's getting a treatment. There's going to be a Trades in Five movie. It's going to be huge. It's going to be epic. Going to be a lot of people in it. So look out for that.
Yeah. He's going to help dump some gas on this channel. So thanks so much to the 5,230 eyeballs in here. Hit that like or that heart wherever you are, if you'd be so kind. Easiest way to help out this channel. Fantastic night. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
I'm going to end this stream.